What's up, Internet? Welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devinder Hardwar. This week, I'm joined by Senior Editor Sam Rutherford. Hey, Sam.
Hey, how's it going?
Going okay. And also Podcast Producer Ben Ellman. Hey, Ben.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. We are back with a proper episode this time after a bit of a holiday. And yeah, we were doing an event in New York. That was fun. But we're here to talk about Samsung's latest Unpacked event, where they showed off their latest foldables, the Z Fold 7, the Z Flip 7, and, you know, the Galaxy Watch 8, which I feel like is far less on the desirable things among Samsung fans. But okay, that's there too. Sam's going to be talking about all that. And also, all of us in Gadget have been doing a lot of work around the Amazon Prime Day because we like to collect the deals. And being in media these days, like the deals are an important part of like how we survive and everything. And you know what? There's some good deals out there too. You can, we'll talk about like the best things we saw. I was in charge of TV stuff. I was shocked at like what the prices were coming down to. Like a really good mini LED 98 inch set under $2,000. Wild stuff out there. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes and drop us an email at podcastinggadget.com. And join us Thursday mornings around 11 a.m. Eastern for our live streams. Typically, although summer is going to be a little weird because I'm off for a couple of weeks. So I guess we probably won't be doing another live stream until, looking at the calendar here, probably August 7th-ish. So we're taking a bit of a summer break, but you can mark your calendars. August 7th, around 10:30 a.m. Eastern, we will do some sort of live stream. And I do want to bank some like questions from the audience. So if you have stuff you want us to discuss, drop us an email at podcastinggadget.com. I predict news will probably be pretty light that week at the beginning of August. Sam, once again, you were out at a major tech event. This time it was Galaxy Unpacked. Can you talk a bit about just dealing with that event, you know, in the middle of summer? And also, what were the highlights for you from it?
Yeah, I mean, it's always interesting. It's like, you know, a little weird to have, you know, Unpacked so soon after 4th of July. Because, you know, usually you want to have a little bit, you know, more time to prep. And especially because for me, this is like, you know, one of my favorite events of the year. If you know me, you know I love foldable devices. And that's, which, you know, the big focus for this show. So we got, you know, a handful of new devices, the main headline ones being the new Z Fold 7. There's also a new Z Fold Flip 7, Z Flip 7. And for the first time, we're getting a FE Flip, which is the first time Samsung's ever done one of its, like, you know, FE, more affordable versions of any of its foldables. And then there's the Galaxy Watch 8. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff to talk about. I'm going to, you know, I just get right into it. Start with the Z Fold 7. There's already someone in the chat who's like, the Z Fold 7 is a regressive joke. And I think that's like incredibly harsh because the design of the new Z Fold 7, I think, is magnificent. Okay, so let me just run down
the
some
S Pen, right? It loses the S Pen, so a lot of people are pissed.
Yes. And we're going to get to that. I do understand that argument. But just some quick specs. The main screen is now 8 inches across, which is up from 7.6. And as you know, if you want this device, you want that big flexible screen. So getting more of it, can't argue with that. But the design is, you know, Samsung has really thinned out and kind of streamlined and sleekified the phone. And so now it's 8.9 millimeters thick when it's folded. Now, for reference, that's the S25 Ultra is 8.2 millimeters. So basically, you're talking about the exact same thickness for a foldable phone. And we kind of saw this coming. If you look back to the S25 Edge, they kind of, you know, really went all out in thinness on that. And I was like, okay, that's cool for the Edge. It's kind of, you know, a better version of the S25 Plus. But when you streamline a big foldable phone like the Z Fold 7, it makes a much, much bigger impact. It's also significantly lighter, 215 grams. That's just 3 grams heavier than the S25 Ultra. So actually, I have both right here, so I can hold them up. And you can see basically the same size, same thickness. The Z Fold 7 is actually a little bit narrower because, you know, it has that kind of folding design. But it doesn't feel like a candy bar the way that, you know, previous Z Folds have had, because it's just like, you know, almost baton-like, very, very skinny. And so in a lot of ways, I feel like Samsung has really done it, because what's the biggest issues with foldable phones? They weren't waterproof. They fixed that a while ago. And they were just big and heavy, and, you know, they would weigh you down when you put them in your pocket. that is no longer the case. This thing is just like magnificently designed. And this is kind of what I've always wanted Samsung. I feel like, you know, the Z Fold line was kind of treading water for a couple generations. And this is a really big design change. And they've, you know, kind of knocked out one of the final remaining hurdles to the Z Fold like adoption. Obviously, aside from price, this thing costs $2,000.
Price is a big one.
Yeah, this thing costs starts at $2,000, which is obviously insanely expensive. And so that is the big kind of barrier to entry for, you know, big foldables in general. But yeah.
I mean, first impressions here, we did point out the super thin Samsung phone when they announced the, you know, their initial batch. And thin phones do seem like they're going to be the thing this year. But there's a lot of speculation that a lot of that comes down to like what these companies will eventually do with foldables. So we kind of saw it directly here, like Samsung building a single thin phone, and then they can apply that like double thin plain thing to a foldable. If the rumors are true about Apple also releasing a, you know, very thin iPhone, you can expect that to be like sandwiched.
Yeah, and the rumors have been going along for quite a while that like 2026 is the year when we might see an Apple foldable iPhone.
Which is pretty wild, because Samsung is on the Galaxy Z Fold 7 now. I feel like the original Fold, we could call that beta tests, you know, like we criticized as such. That was not a thing anybody should have bought. But Samsung like quickly started correcting those issues. Like they've had years of experience building foldables, dealing with the hinge, figuring out how to make it waterproof and making these things thinner. Do you think, Sam, that like how hard would it be for Apple to actually catch up to where Samsung is now in the foldable world?
That's a good question. And I think the best kind of, you know, trajectory to look at is Google's Pixel Fold and then Pixel 9 Pro Fold. The Pixel Fold was like, you know, had that landscape design and it was a little bit weird. But as soon as they jumped to the Pixel 9 Pro Fold, Google almost completely caught up with Samsung in just two generations. And so I think, you know, that's kind of always like, you know, Apple's playbook. We're going to wait for the technology and the design and people to figure out some of like the quirks of like new form factors. And then they can swoop in and kind of skip some of those like early growing pains and kind of get right into it. And I really think that Apple will be able to come out with something pretty engaging relatively quick. Might take two generations, kind of similar to you know, what we saw with Google. They might, you know, hit a home run on the first attempt, but I think there'll probably still be a little few awkward points. But and in some ways with the Z Fold line in general, especially with the Z Fold 7, Samsung actually, I feel like they might have saw what Google was doing with the Pixel 9 Pro Fold, where, you know, they made the outside screen the exact same size as a regular Pixel 9. And so you know, they kind of, Samsung is moving closer to that, where, you know, you have more of like a square phone and a wider, you know, exterior cover screen.
The Flip is looking really nice too. Before we get to the Flip, actually, the Z Fold, the other big thing is like, this looks like the craziest camera Samsung has put on any of its devices, right? 200 megapixels.
I mean, you can actually trace that lineage back to the S25 Ultra, right, and the S24 Ultra, I believe, as well. And then they put it on the S25 Edge. And I think that was a big sign of like, hey, we took this huge high resolution, sensor and we figured out how to slim it down and put it in the Edge. And then naturally that also allowed them to put it in the Z Fold 7 as well.
Yeah. It really sticks out of the Z Fold 7 though. Like the Z Fold 7 is super thin, but that camera bump is, you know, that's a big lens. It's a big sensor.
Speaking of cameras, one interesting change, and I think most people won't care about this because even though it technically is a downgrade, Samsung got rid of the under display camera that was on the inside, you know, hidden underneath the main flexible screen. And they went back to a more traditional hole punch camera.
Yeah.
And it's higher resolution now, 10 megapixels. And so obviously that's going to, you know, have some really nice benefits if you use it for video calling or, you know, video meetings and stuff like that. You're just going to have better image quality overall. Yes, you know, you do have that little, you know, dot in the, you know, top right of the screen. I don't really think people are going to care about that. But it is just interesting from like a, you know, development standpoint, because it seems like Samsung was so gung-ho about like this technology and being able to have like, you know, an uninterrupted display, and then they're kind of retreating back from that. I don't know if they're going to give it up on entirely, but it's kind of interesting to see that.
I think probably part of it is that the actual good camera sensors have done such a good job of getting smaller and higher quality. The trade-off of just having a little hole on the screen display like is worth it to have a much higher quality front-facing camera. I've played with a bunch of like, you know, Android phones where they have the seamless front cameras. I don't mind it on the iPhone, and I'm always constantly shocked about how good the quality is on the iPhone compared to some of those underglass cameras. So I feel like that's it. Trade-off is just the thing. Anything else about the Z Fold 7, Sam? It seems like you're a fan. I know you like the Z Fold in general.
Yeah.
This does seem like the most refined version they put out there.
Oh, 100%. You know, that said, the battery capacity hasn't changed. It's 4,400 milliamp hours. So same as last year. Although you should see a little bit better power efficiency thanks to the new Snapdragon 8 Elite chip. And then we have to talk about, hey, there is no longer S Pen support on the Z Fold 7. That is something that, like, I think people really like to see. But Samsung themselves said they saw, and I'm quoting, very low usage of S Pens with Z Fold devices. So I think we're talking like less than 10%, maybe less than 5% of users were actually using stylus support. And after Samsung removed the stylus slot on the S25 or the S Ultra line, I think the kind of the writing has been on the wall for the death of, you know, S Pen integration, or it just like kind of clawing it back. And I also think that, like, just with the kind of much better precision and accuracy and responsiveness you get from today's modern touchscreens, the idea of needing a stylus, especially on a smaller device, you know, it's not all that important. Now, if you're talking, you know, larger tablets, you know, 9-inch, 10-inch, 12-inch, bigger than that tablets for, like, you know, dedicated creative artists, you know, and drawing uses. Obviously, that is still very important. But stylus, I mean, I'm not a great, you know, painter, artist, whatever.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, sketching on the Z Fold screen has always been a little wonky to me, especially because it is still, you know, there is some ultra-thin glass, but, you know, the screen is flexible. So you can't, like, you know, you're always kind of worried about pressing too hard on that screen.
It's probably time to take a step back from the whole stylus thing too. Like, that rewind way back, like, that goes back to the original Galaxy Note, right? And I forget if they even did that before the Galaxy Note, but that was a big deal because I was like, hey, big phone, that started the phablet trend. And also people who had trouble with touch typing could just hand draw stuff. And I remember for a lot of the Asian markets too, like, it was easier to just draw, you know, draw in what you're typing versus peck hunting and pecking on those keyboards. I think the keyboards have gotten better. I think, like, overall, a lot of people I see are also using voice dictation to input text and things, and that has gotten better. So then you're left with just, like, this big chunky thing that requires both space to hold the stylus in a phone frame, but also space in the, like, layers of a phone for a digitizer.
Yep.
It doesn't seem worth it anymore,
and right? Samsung specifically mentioned that. It's like, granted, the digitizer is relatively thin, but they said, hey, by taking that layer out, they're able to make the phone a little bit thinner. And I think that's a good call out is, like, hey, remember when everybody had physical keyboards on smartphones? Okay, those went away too. And I think it's kind of the same thing for styluses on phones specifically. Not, you know, you're still going to have tablets with, you know, Wacom support or, you know, Apple Pencil support and stuff like that. So it's more of a niche thing and kind of less of a demand feature in terms of, you know, on phones.
It's less, I mean, it's disappointing sometimes, but sometimes companies do this too. I was talking about, like, Sony's XM, you know, headphones, and the XM5, because of how they designed it, no longer folded to be compact. And for a lot of people, that was a big downgrade from the XM4. It made it harder to travel with. Sony justified it for the bigger drivers and everything. And I believe they're bringing back the fold with the XM6.
They did eventually bring it back. Yeah.
This happens sometimes, and it's, if you are annoyed by it, then do not buy this product and voice your criticism here. The stylus, I don't think, is a thing most people are clamoring for, and maybe there's room for somebody to do, like, an external stylus that will work well on these things without the need for a digitizer panel too. I feel like for such a niche product, somebody should be working on something like that. I don't know. Anything else about the Z Fold 7, Sam?
No, that's pretty much it. I just, you know, for all the, like, people who are, like, you know, big foldable enthusiasts and are, like, actively dislike it or, you know, are very hesitant about it, go pick one up in a store. Go touch it, because the design is really the main thing with this phone, and it is such an improvement over previous generations. I own the Z Fold 4. I own the Z Fold 5. They were great phones, but there was not a ton of improvement between the Z Fold 5 and the Z Fold 6. And so this is definitely a jump up in terms of, you know, Samsung is really flexing its engineering chops with this phone.
How does this compare to the other foldables we've seen? I don't know if you've seen the stuff from Huawei and other folks at this point.
Yeah, and so that's the one weird thing is that, like, a lot of the really cool, like, China only or at least Asian, you know, specific big foldables, we just don't get over here. And so it is kind of a sad kind of gap that we can't quite bridge, because, you know, there's your Honor Magic V's and your Huawei phones, and those are very nice, and a lot of them have bigger batteries. You know, some people in chat are just like, hey, they do have bigger batteries and they're just as thin. And I would love to be able to have more competition. I think obviously part of the reason why Samsung is doing this is because they are kind of starting to feel the heat from some of their competitors, including Google and other Chinese manufacturers. It sucks. I wish we had more big foldable phone choices, especially here in the US.
I've seen a whole bunch of TikToks of people like traveling through China and looking at people just whipping out really slick looking thin foldables. And they're like, what is that? Why don't we have that? Yeah. Just a strange thing we're in. So what about the Z Flip 7? This one also looks thinner. Looks like they're applying kind of the same mentality, but more in like the foldable candy bar style, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. The Z Flip has definitely gotten, you know, a new level of thinness. But I think the biggest change is that it now has a 4.3-inch edge-to-edge cover screen. And this is great because Motorola was kind of ahead of the step in terms of getting that, like, hey, you have a small screen on the outside and just give me as much screen as you can. And Samsung always had like a weird cutout around the cameras and stuff like that. That's gone for the Z Flip 7, and it's really nice. And it is a little bit bigger too. And then on the inside, we're getting a 4,300 milliamp hour battery, the biggest on any flip yet. And one thing they didn't mention at Samsung Unpacked is that it now supports DeX. So if you have a tiny phone and you want to plug it into a monitor, you can do wireless DeX.
You want to DeX it up.
Yeah, you have DeX support on the flip line for the first time, which is kind of cool. Although I think it is, you know, a bit of a niche feature. And then for the first time ever, we are getting a Flip 7 FE, which is the first FE for any of Samsung's foldables. That said, this is the one that, like, I'm going to tell people don't get too excited about, because it's almost essentially a Galaxy Z Flip 6, but with an Exynos processor inside instead of a Snapdragon. And actually, the Z Flip 7 is also getting an Exynos processor, but it's going to be slightly faster than the one in the FE.
What's the price difference between the plane and the FE?
The regular Z Flip 7 is going to be $1,100, and the FE is going to be $900. So you're about looking, you know, $200 price difference. And then on top of like your pre-order discounts and stuff like that.
I remember when the Z Flip was like $700, wasn't it? Like $700 to $800. Like, it was
It never got down that much. It started at $1,500 and it has been slowly going down.
Right, right.
As opposed to the Z Fold line, which started at $1,800 and is now at $2,000, which is like you guys are going in the opposite direction. That's
I know a few folks in Gadget. I think our editor in chief Aaron Sabores has a Z Flip and he really enjoys that.
He really enjoys it, like, but he is not a fan of the cameras, and I don't think the cameras have changed for this generation. We'll have to do some more testing to really dive into that one.
It's a cute little guy, because you can flex it, you can have it sitting up, you can do all sorts of stuff. It is a weird type of a smartphone, whereas I think we've lost that in a lot of things now that everything became like a square or a rectangular slab. So
I mean, it is really nice to hold, and you just kind of appreciate how like compact it really is. That said, you know, I want that bigger screen, so I'm more of a fold person anyway.
Sure. What's the sound of the Z Flip? Does it feel satisfying when you close it in? And
you can do the kind of classic, you know, close it with one hand. That's thing. Good. And it is extremely satisfying.
That's good. We do with the era of just like flipping your phone closed, or the sliders from like the Matrix and stuff, like the sort of physical stuff we used to do with our phones. That was a lot of fun. I don't think you'd want to do that with the actual fold, because you're like, my precious baby, do not.
Please gently unfold. Both the Fold 7 and the Flip 7 have got new Armor Flex hinges from Samsung. And so that kind of helps reduce the crease. There is still a crease, but it's at this point, you either can live with it or you just can't. It is like the crease is such a minor complaint in the whole scheme of the phone that like I can't argue with people who like don't like it. It's like, if you don't like it, that's cool. But
Sam, for our video viewers, can you show the crease?
Let me see if I can. Let's see. Yeah, you can kind of see it right there. But you I really have to emphasize this. You only notice the crease when you're looking at it from the side. Like, right now, can't really see it.
Right.
And, you know, most people, when they look at their phone, they're kind of going, doing like this. They're looking dead on at it, okay? And so it's one of those things. It's like, it reminds me of that quote from The Matrix. It's like, I just don't even see it anymore. I just see the phone and a nice screen, and the crease doesn't even enter the calculation.
Is it still a plastic screen?
It's a plastic screen. Samsung did say they kind of increased the thickness of the of the ultra thin glass. So there is a glass layer in there, and there's a new titanium kind of lattice inside to add even more rigidity. But it is still, you know, if you want to put like a dent in it on purpose, it's not difficult.
That's another thing that makes me worried about having one with kids around. But, you know, yeah. I also, the feeling of touching glass when you're doing a touchscreen is so nice. I feel like I don't want to get rid of that either. Anyway.
You still have that exterior screen.
You do have the exterior screen too, which is basically a whole phone in itself. Is there anything notable about the Galaxy Watch 8?
It's yeah, a new Galaxy Watch.
It looks cool. Yeah,
two nice things. They brought back the classic with the rotating bezel. So now there's the Watch 8 and the Watch 8 Classic. As someone who thinks that the rotating bezel on smartwatches is like the best smartwatch feature around, I'm so glad they brought it back. I don't love the way the Classic looks. It looks a little bit too traditional. I want something a little bit sleeker. They like really love having those ridges on the rotating bezel, and I'm not sure they need them. I also got to say, I despise this cushion design. If you look at the new Galaxy Watches, they're doing they're kind of a squircle, and then there's a circular display on top of the squircle.
Ooh.
And it's like, y'all got to pick one. Either do a square watch or do a round watch. And we kind of knew this was coming because the Galaxy Watch Ultra last year did the same thing. And I just like the cushion design is weird looking. It's kind of an in between. And it's like, if you guys are going to flex your design chops, you got to pick something and go with it.
It doesn't feel sleek is the thing, but it also feels like they wanted to show off a smaller display, but also they didn't have room to house all the internals. So
yeah, it seems like a weird compromise in a way that I don't really enjoy. That said, there is a new antioxidant sensor that you, okay. And it's a little weird because you have to take the watch off and put your thumb on the sensor on the back of the watch to get a reading.
Oh, great.
And so it's like, how many times are you going to do that a day? I don't know.
What does the antioxidant sensor do? Do you need more Gatorade?
It looks at your skin and it reads the antioxidants level. You know, the antioxidants are supposed to like, you know, reduce free radicals and kind of, you know, help combat things like cancer and stuff like that. And so everybody should be kind of ideally shooting for more antioxidants. One thing that was really funny is that during our hands-on session, I was talking to a bunch of people and one of the reps was saying that like, we were looking at all the scores. Sherlyn scored very low on her antioxidant reading, but they said everyone that they saw, except for one person, was scoring very, very low, or not very, very low, but just low on the accident level.
This is not a common thing.
Yeah, like as a control or something, you should have like someone who's like been very committed to like a vegan diet.
Yeah, yeah. They had one person who got a good antioxidant score. Literally, everybody else was very low or low, and I think that probably says more about like the modern diet that like we have in society. Then,
well, yeah, but you're not blaming the tech here. You're not talking about the tech here. You're like, oh, well, maybe our diets are the thing that's wrong, rather than
I think everybody's diet could be way, way better. Yeah.
I absolutely agree with that part, but I think that the sensor is probably wonky as well.
It also makes me think like, is this sensor actually even necessary, or is it just another thing to make it sound like you're tracking somebody's health? Like, I've been reading about antioxidants forever. I understand the whole free radicals thing. I don't know if a sensor is a thing that we can fully trust to do this, and I don't know if Samsung has had the health, you know, expertise to start grading people on this too.
I mean, they've done quite a bit of like, you know, partners or getting certified by FDA for some of the previous sensors and stuff like that. And I think this is just like kind of the natural evolution of the smartwatch has become the like health tracking device that you wear on you at all times.
And I've literally never heard of an antioxidant sensor. Device.
You know, the antioxidant sensor itself is, I think, relatively novel, but like, you know, there's a whole bunch of, you know, more niche health metrics that, you know, companies are going to try to continue adding onto smartwatches just from here until forever.
For sure. I do like seeing the rotating bezel. That is always a nice fluid thing. It's kind of a thing I wish more companies were doing, because I think the Apple Watch looks sleeker, but it doesn't have that tactile, wonderful functionality. You have the crown on the Apple Watch, but this is, it just looks impressive. Anyway, I don't know why we're talking about this, because I don't think anybody's actually buying the Galaxy Watch 8. Do we have a sense of how big this market actually is, Sam?
I mean, it's hard to say. Like, obviously the three big players are Apple has the land, you know, the huge majority. And Samsung is up there, and then Google's kind of in like a distant third. And aside from that, you know, you have your Garmins and your stuff like that for like dedicated like marathon runners or just like, you know, fitness enthusiasts. It's hard to say. I think people have just kind of determined that like a smartwatch is a really good companion device. It's not necessary, but if you are, you know, constantly trying to monitor your health and fitness and stuff like that, it's nice to have.
I feel like the smartwatch era itself has also died off a little too. Like the smartwatch outside of people who are exercising and actively want to track all those things, and in that case, you're going to pay for something that's a little more health focused. The casual smartwatch, the one where people just like walk around with, like I've had an Apple Watch for a while, the Series 4, and I wore it off and on early on, and I frankly don't miss much by not having it, but I'm also not out and about doing much. I don't know. I would consider a future Apple Watch. I just wish these things were a little more additive to our lives these days. But anyway, anything else you want to mention from Galaxy Impact, Sam? Like, didn't they tease a trifold? Yeah.
Yeah, there was one thing we didn't see. There's been long rumors about Samsung coming out with some sort of trifold,
right?
Galaxy Fold Ultra, maybe they would call it. And I thought they might have teased it as like a one more thing, or kind of, you know, kind of similar to what they did with the S25 Edge at the first Unpack this year. But they just ended the keynote, didn't say anything about it, no news. So it remains to be seen if we're going to see it sometime this year or in the future. I hope we do, but just, you know, I
think
part of the reason I was there in person is because I wanted like get a look on that thing if it made an appearance. Sadly,
we've seen a couple Chinese companies kind of do trifold stuff, just say like we did it first. But I'm also, is this kind of BS? You know, like I get it. It's like the razor blade thing. Like, screw it, we're doing five blades, we're doing eight blades. I don't know, functionally making a phone that kind of folds out like a pamphlet is actually helpful or useful. It's just
I am not sure about that either. I love big foldable phones, and right. I it's one of those things where it's like, I'm gonna have to live with it to like really experience it, because like how cumbersome is it gonna be to, you know, unfold this thing every time? And like 8 inches is a pretty big screen. Do I need like a full like 10-inch tablet in my pocket? Maybe, not sure. I don't know, we'll see.
And do you need trifold to get there, or do you do the 10 or 12 inch tablet and make it a half fold and then make it more like a portable little netbook like the Courier that we keep talking about, and the many other projects Microsoft has killed? What was the other one? The Neo, the Surface Neo?
Yeah, the one they announced and just never came out with. And I was really sad because that thing looked cool and they showed it off.
I feel like the door, every time we see one of those, we're like, man, that looks really cool. And every time Microsoft's like, we're too afraid to do the brave thing. Somebody's going to do that. And that will probably be, we've heard the rumors about like an iPad mini kind of being essentially the foldable for Apple, but that's also an 8-inch screen. So that's just equivalent to the Z Fold. But I can imagine somebody doing a 10-inch or a 12-inch tablet that you fold. We've seen some from Lenovo, right? Like these new laptops, these new foldable laptops. I've not played too much with them. But I feel like there's totally room for somebody to do that really well. Because I could see how that would be useful, is the thing. Like, I could visualize in my mind how I use that. The trifold phone, I don't know if I've ever wanted a phone to feel like a brochure or a pamphlet.
Right. I kind of agree. It feels like one step too far. But if they can make the, like, unfolding process, like, really elegant somehow, I could see it. But, yeah, it's one of those things that's, like, I think it's kind of still in the design space where they're kind of figuring out how to really, you know, optimize that, you know, the upcoming trifold phones. And Huawei has one out.
I want more. Like, let's talk more about, like, let's make our devices more flexible, but give me the smartwatch that's essentially a snap bracelet, you know, like snap it onto your wrist and it's just a big OLED thing, and then maybe you unroll that, and that can be a separate kind of device too. There's a lot of room to play here. I just don't, Trifold not really doing it for me. Anything else you want to mention from Samsung's Unpacked event, Sam?
No, that's kind of it. Right. Obviously, the at this point, the next big event is probably going to be Google.
For sure. Okay, so check out our coverage of all this Samsung hardware. You guys have hands-ons. I'm sure reviews are coming, so stay tuned. TinGadget.com. All right, enough of Samsung. Let's talk about Amazon Prime Day a bit, and honestly, like, just a bit, because I think a lot of the sales are probably done by the time you're hearing this. Any takeaways for you, Sam? Because I know you've worked on a guide. I worked on the TV guide. Any takeaways from you this year?
I think it's interesting. We're seeing some discounts on AMD's X3D chips, which is like their powerhouse gaming chips. And usually those sell for maybe $100 or $50 above MSRP. So to see any discounts on those is actually kind of cool. So if you're in need of a new, you know, desktop CPU for your gaming rig at home, that's definitely something that I would check out. And it's actually kind of crazy. The redesigned Razer Blade 14 is up to 400 off. And my biggest complaint with all Razer laptops is that they're a little bit too expensive. And so, hey, if you can get a discount on those, hey, suddenly you're, you know, approaching something that's like a lot more reasonable. And even Dell, their completely redesigned Alienware Area 51 laptops, the flagship one with a 5090 RTX 5090 GPU, that is also on sale. And these are systems that just came out like less than 3 or 4 months ago. So to see, you know, pretty significant discounts on these already is actually kind of cool.
That's cool. Yeah, a couple of highlights I'm seeing from our main page that you could still get as of Thursday. Some of these deals will still be live on Friday. The Sony WH-1000XM5s. This is the previous gen Sonys that we talked about. They're down to $248. That is a crazy good price.
I bought a pair for my wife, and I paid full price for them like a year or year and a half ago.
So that was like, what, $350?
Yeah. And so if you can get a deal on those, they're pretty good.
Those are fantastic. As we mentioned, actually, in this episode, those don't fold down anymore like the 4s and the 3s did.
And my one issue with those is that you can't use them while you're charging, which they fixed for the XM6s. So just beware of that.
Oh, I forgot about that. Like, the thing is, those batteries last like 40 to 50 hours. So I'm like, even if I'm on a long plane ride, like once I'm done and done traveling for the day, I always plug it in to charge.
Yeah, if you're the kind of person who like regularly remembers to charge your gear, it shouldn't be an issue. But like every once in a while, you'll have the thing like, oh, my headset died in the middle of a call. And then suddenly I'm like, oh, I can't use it while it's plugged in, which is just a little.
So we reviewed the new ones, we've reported on the XM6s coming. The thing is, those didn't really change much other than bringing back folding and doing, you know, playback while charging. So the XM5s sound incredible. I was just on, every time I go on a flight, these are the headphones I bring with me, and they like kill background noise. They kill the plane engine noise. They kill like the annoying chatter from the overhead stuff. If you need to hear somebody, like a flight attendant or somebody near you, you can like cup your hands to your ears, and it'll like enable the microphone. So it actually, that does a good job of making it really flexible too. Anyway, $248 for that thing. Great, great deal. I'm seeing Mario Kart and Switch 2 bundles all over the place. Amazon had one for $500 too.
There's a fair amount of good game deals. The Dragon Quest 3 HD 2D remake is like $25 off. There's like some small deals, not a ton, like $10 off, $15 off on Legend of Zelda Echoes of Wisdom, Tears of the Kingdom. And that's kind of crazy because normally we never see discounts on first-party Nintendo games.
That's true. That's true.
So that's kind of nice to see.
And good timing there, too, because people buying the Switch 2 who maybe didn't get the older stuff. That's cool. I've been working on the TV guide, so that's the one I've been like putting a lot of info into here. Surprisingly, not that many like great OLED deals. Sony's Bravia 8.2, the 65 inch, is down to $3,000, but I still think that's too much. The best OLED deal I saw is LG's OLED Evo C5. The 65 inch is basically $1,800 now. Good price. What is a crazy price, and a lot of good deals I'm seeing, is around the mini LED sets. And these are the things that are better than normal LCD screens. They have a huge amount of backlights behind them, so they get you like almost OLED like contrast. The TCL QM6K 98 inch QD mini OLED.
That's a $1,800.
$1,800. 98 inches. For $1,800. That's a lot of TV. You better have space on your wall for that TV. Hey, but also the QM8K is the 65 inch QD mini LED is down to basically $1,000. I paid that for the TCL 8 series several years ago, like 2020. That was their first mini LED set. I love that set. It still looks good, and that's a great price for it. The Sony Bravia 5 mini LED, the 85 inch is down to $2,300 as well. So the big sets have also jumped in price. If you want a frame style TV, crazy good deals on like the Hisense Canvas TV, which is basically copying Samsung's The Frame. It's a simple concept. Like it's a TV that looks like an art frame that you can display art with and has like low glare and stuff like that. The 65 inch is down to $900 for the Hisense TV, and they make good TVs too. So there's that. Samsung's The Frame Pro, the 65 inch is $1,900. This is the one with mini LED panels too. So this is a good time to get a new TV. If you've been sitting on it, if you've been waiting to upgrade, we have some soundbar deals too. The Sonos Beam Gen 2 is down to $369. Sam, have you ever seen the Sony Bravia Theater Quad in action?
I've heard it in action, and it sounds incredible.
It's wild.
Obviously, this was in like a controlled demo that Sony set up, so obviously they knew how to like make it sound good. But that's one of the Theater Quad is like something that like I kind of want for my own home. Because it makes setting up the surround sound just so simple because you have four wireless speakers, you put them wherever you want, and they kind of configure themselves.
These aren't even just speakers, like I'm going to share the stab here. These are like flat panels. These are just like flat things. You put them in different, like the front corners of your room and the rear corners of your room. Anyway, they're $500 off. They're still $2,000. But everything I've heard from people who've tried these and some people who own them, they sound incredible. And this is like for the people who have a lot of money to spend and you have like a really nice modern living room and you don't want to have big towers or big or even a soundbar around. Like apparently these do really well. So I'd love to test
that's
these.
Yeah, that's really neat. And it supports spatial sound mapping and everything. That's
Sony
cool.
Spatial sound. Atmos,
and if you have a Sony TV, there is a special feature. You can use the Sony TV as your center channel and then let the quads like really go.
Don't do that. Never do that, but you know, it is a feature. Like because they did it, LG, Samsung.
It would require those speakers getting suck. A Sony TV. Why would
no,
you not
because
do
those
that?
Speakers suck. We have talked about this many times. The problem with flat panel TVs, your speakers suck.
If you only use the speaker on the TV, yes, it sucks. But as like a fill, it's actually kind of nice.
As a fill, maybe, but the center channel is an important channel. Like, here's the thing. People are like, oh, it's just dialogue. No. On like a real surround sound system, your center channel is handling a lot of action, a lot of stuff all at once. Anyway, try it.
I'm the audio guy, and I approve this message.
Yeah.
That said, go listen to like the Theater Quads. They make a virtual center channel, and it's crazy good.
Right. I feel like that's all you need. Like, I know a lot of people who are just like all about only two speakers. All I need are two speakers, but they have like two big ass towers and a subwoofer. And good speakers will create a phantom center channel. Like, we have a lot of the Atmos stuff. Like, a lot of that technology will just kind of make that happen. Anyway, that's Prime Day. There's a lot of good stuff happening. Check out Engadget for all of our deals. We've got the collection of our favorite deals up at the top of the site. It'll be live until Friday. And let us know if you found anything good. Drop us an email, podcastengadget.com. All right, let's move on to other news. And we'll just blow through this real quick. But I think one of the funniest, biggest pieces of news this week is XCEO.
Oh, it's not funny. I don't find it funny at all.
It's hilarious. XCEO Linda Yaccarino is stepping down after 2 years. How dare you laugh at her, Ben? How dare you laugh at her?
Oh, okay. No. I think this part is funny. I think that Grok is not funny at all.
Her unwavering support of Elon Musk's insanity. We've brought up the idea of the pain sponge from Succession, where basically a fake CEO is hired to just absorb the garbage from the press and the media and the public and everything. Linda Yaccarino was Elon Musk's pain sponge for X, and she just like support the hell out of it until we don't know like how closely related these are. But earlier this week, right before this, Grok, which is X's AI chatbot thing. It kind of had a weird anti-Semitic freakout after a while. It started referring to itself as Mecha Hitler. It also started like referring to things almost in the voice of Elon Musk, which was wild too. Not great. Not great. And this is actually not the first time Grok has had like a weird little freakout about this. But anyway, that happened the day after, or a few days after, Yakarino's out. There is reporting.
It was literally the day after.
It is the day
then
after.
I think that was the same day as a new like Grok unveiling.
Yeah, there's a new algo, I think 4.0 for Grok.
Yeah. They were unveiling like 4.0 at like a little demo.
There was additional
and
reporting.
Everybody was like, oh, are we still going to, are they still going to do this? Because
people were asking for comment. That's the whole thing. But there was additional reporting from the New York Times that Yakarino said that she was planning to leave before the Grok freakout. We'll see. Sure. I think she was maybe, it could possibly be that she was aware that other changes were going to be happening and that kind of played into her decision. Cool. I don't know if anybody's actually using Grok. There's also news that Grok AI is going to be available in Tesla vehicles next week. So, do you want your car to think it's Mecha Hitler? I don't think that's a good thing. I don't think that's an upgrade for Tesla.
I saw some headlines saying, get ready for a hard right turn in Teslas.
Oh boy. That's what would the new navigation voice be basically for them?
So let's just move on to Cloudflare.
On to Cloudflare. A cool piece of news, Cloudflare, which is, to be clear, is a service that people subscribe to that essentially protect their websites from DDoSs and other attacks and things like that. A lot of the internet uses it. When Cloudflare goes down or has issues, a lot of the internet has issues. So
they're one of like the big backbones of the internet that people kind of overlook sometimes.
It's been something we've talked about because that is kind of a dangerous thing, actually, because it kind of kills the whole distribution of the internet being a useful tool. Cloudflare says it's experimenting with blocking AI bot scrapers unless they pay a fee. So that's one way to deal with AI bots and AI theft, I guess. Except, I don't know. It's a private beta experiment called Pay-Per-Crawl. I don't know how virtuous this actually is, because this is just another way for Cloudflare to make people pay them. So good and bad, I guess. I feel like the people who really want to do this will pay.
Yeah, but then there's all of the other stuff that people are talking about in media specifically, where they're talking about like a traffic apocalypse that's happening. Because if you are looking for information, and you can get it in the like Google AI preview, or instead of going to Google at all, you're going to ChatGPT or Claude or something. It's taking all of this information from like some scraped image of the internet, you know, that might have been 6 months ago or something. And it's actually, you're not going to Engadget.com. You're not going to the New York Times. You're not going to like any of the other places where new information is being put online. And that is killing a lot of the like financial incentive to put new information online.
Yeah. Why would you click into a website if your search engine is showing you everything? Like Google does this already. If you search a lot of Engadget articles, it will summarize them and then link to, hey, this is all from Engadget. That's it. That's all the information people need, is that quick glance of information. So I get it. It's a dangerous thing. Media is not great right now, and this is a weird situation we're in. Let's talk about Jack Dorsey, who's back in the news. Jack Dorsey just released a Bluetooth messaging app that doesn't need the internet, supposedly secure. It's a BitChat. It's a secure mesh chat. I also saw reporting from TechCrunch saying it was not actually tested by security engineers and professionals, so we don't know how secure it actually is. This is not a new idea. The idea of a mesh messaging app, especially over Bluetooth, I believe during the Hong Kong protests, it was a thing that was used quite a bit there because it couldn't easily be tracked. It's a great idea if it actually works. Sam, Ben, any thoughts on this thing?
It seems like Dorsey is doing another act of trying to put the toothpaste back in the tube.
Right.
Like he has realized, oh no, some of the stuff that I've done has not been good. Perhaps selling Twitter, or like giving my blessing to sell Twitter, has done an overall like net negative to the world. So, because of the ensuing protests that are probably going to happen, let's make it easier for these people to communicate or something. That is, you know, my like 2-second cyberpunk novel about why
I could see that. Like,
I don't know why it's, you know, it probably has some connections to his company Block as well. You know, decentralized, blockchain, all of that stuff.
Dorsey is an interesting figure because he has since become like one of those really annoying Silicon Valley people that looks like he's always on a Zen retreat, you know, like, and that's kind of what it is. But he was like a, you know, punk kid coder. He was somebody who came to San Francisco, didn't really have a job, and like stumbled into working at Odeo, which is where the whole idea for Twitter and everything kind of came about.
Originally a podcast company.
Originally a podcast company. Where is it now as a podcast company?
Or a podcast platform or something like that.
Something like that. But, you know, Dorsey didn't, he's not like the Ivy League kid that left school early like Zuckerberg. He's not, I don't think he's necessarily somebody from like tech royalty. Like, it seems like he was the scrappy programmer that wanted to do things. I don't give him much credit. Like, I don't care if he's sad about selling Twitter because he made a lot of money doing that. And this is probably the least he could do. Blue Sky started as a project within Twitter because I think he was discussing, along with the people who were starting the Blue Sky project, that there was a need for a sort of like decentralized social network as well. So I think he is thinking about this stuff, but I don't know. I cannot take him seriously at this point unless he's like provably doing something that is bettering us in the tech world. BitChat sounds cool though. It's a cool idea.
And then there's this really scary thing about Marco Rubio being, having like an AI imposter sort of, this is, I guess, kind of a social engineering attack because they are impersonating Rubio, both in his style of writing and then also his voice. Is that correct?
I believe so. I mean, and this is literally the things we were warning people about, like when LLMs and a lot of these AI powered tools were coming about. I was like, oh, great. We're in an era of misinformation, and now you're going to make it easy to replicate people's voices and the way they chat and stuff. Because social engineering is not hard. So, you know, hackers who perform social engineering are not doing complex things. It's often like talking to the right person to get access to whatever information they're looking for. This kind of shows like how AI is making this a lot more dangerous. And we still don't know who's behind it. That's a scarier thing.
I mean, it could very well be a foreign government, but this is something that's going to be happening much, much, much more often. I was just talking with my parents a couple of days ago, and they said that, like, thankfully, it wasn't actually a voice clone of me, but they got a call saying, like, hey, Dad, like, I'm in trouble, like, something, something, you know, trying to tug at the heartstrings of parents. And then eventually, of course, there's always an ask for money or, I don't know, Amazon gift cards, because they love Amazon gift cards.
Did I mention? I feel like I talked about this, but there has been a rise of like those sort of like panic calls, like calls or ransom calls. And this happened to somebody in my family. Like, they got this panic call saying, we have your daughter, you have to come here and, you know, bring us money to get her or something. And she freaked out and called the cops and everything. But this is rampant. And this is no tech involved, no AI involved. But now add in AI replication of your kid's voice or something, or somebody that you know in your family, and it gets a lot scarier.
Yeah. And the really scary thing is, like, you know, what if your kid is doing the thing that, like, all, you know, elementary school kids or, you know, middle high school kids, whatever, all young kids right now want to be like YouTubers. So let's imagine that they are like putting stuff on YouTube. Maybe they have like a nice little following or something.
Now, but yeah.
And yeah, TikTok, but also YouTube, because who knows what's happening with TikTok. Actually, we're going to get to that in a little bit. Imagine somebody like scrapes a bunch of audio from, you know, these pretty earnest attempts at, you know, building an online platform, and you can make a pretty good voice clone of an actual kid. Like, that's scary.
Yeah, you can do that now with 11 Labs, I believe. Like, their technology has been doing this forever. Hey, a lot of this seems like we are stumbling into this crazy universe of AI powered tools, and we have not fully thought about the consequences of them. I wonder what that's going to mean for us, for information, and for humanity. Anyway, let's talk about Anthropic, Ben.
Yeah, actually, no, let's go back. Before we talk about Anthropic, let's talk about how the information published an article this past weekend about how they might have found some buyers for TikTok.
Okay.
Seriously. Like, yeah, the U.S. government is still trying to do this. Like, they've extended the TikTok ban for another some number of days. And the information reported that it could be a crazy group of people, including Blackstone and Andreessen Horowitz and Oracle, and they could be developing a app that right now they're just calling M2, because internally the TikTok app is called M, and not much beyond that is known. We know some foggy ideas of who could be like standing up the U.S. version of TikTok, and also that there's a possibility that come March 2026, there could be a switch from TikTok Classic as we know it now to this like balkanized U.S.-only version of TikTok. That could be a really big thing for how information flows from the world to the U.S., U.S. to the world, and also just, like, affect all of the, like, internet culture memes. Like, I think that's really important.
I saw the story, Ben, but how many times have we reported on the TikTok sale? And those names, those companies are all names that we've talked about before. It is certainly a thing that can happen. Yeah.
It feels realer now just because like they've kicked the can down the road a couple of times and it seems like they want to get serious about it eventually. I absolutely agree with you that there is a wide possibility that sometime between now and then there could be other developments that make this information moot, but this is like the most concrete info that we've had about any kind of a TikTok sale or standing up a U.S. version of TikTok for a while.
I mean, TikTok itself is already a little balkanized too, because like China's not getting access to the full TikTok. The rest of the world gets a separate app essentially, and I hear it also what you see is ultimately different depending on your region too. So,
oh yeah, I mean, yeah, it differs depending on where you are. You know, I've used TikTok like in the Bay Area. I get a lot more Bay Area stuff.
It's getting. Yeah.
Yeah, like whenever I travel, I end up on TikTok and I do see more videos from the like local area than anything else. So now we can talk about Anthropic. This is something that I find really interesting. I swear I don't have any aspirations to be a lawyer, but like legal language is really, really interesting to me. So this Anthropic court case that they got a mixed ruling. They mostly won, but also like got a little bit of a ping because they did illegally download a bunch of stuff in order to train their model. And so who knows? They'll pay a bunch of money or something. This is, you know, a mosquito bite for such a massive venture-backed company like this.
But the main hook is...
Yeah, the thing that I thought was really interesting was that the judge who was presiding over the case, William Alsup, said in the biggest win for Anthropic that using all of this data for training their model was indeed fair use.
So using and I wanna copyrighted read a quote. Material was fair use.
Yeah, yeah. Using all of this copyrighted material was fair use. I want to read a quote from his opinion that says, "The technology at issue was among the most transformative many of us will see in our lifetimes." And if you are someone who doesn't know anything about copyright law or, you know, is just skimming the article, you might be really enticed to be like, man, this judge is like 100% in the tank for AI. And like he is saying, why get in the way of like innovation because it's transformative? No, he's talking about transformative in the fair use copyright law sense. So then I looked up like what transformational use under fair use is. And there are some really interesting examples. Like in the musical Jersey Boys, they were able to use a clip from the Ed Sullivan Show without paying anything to, is it CBS or
probably
NBC?
CBS.
Yes, like CBS. because it was done in the context of like a biographical thing. The Ed Sullivan Show was talking about the Four Seasons. And so they were like, yeah, you don't have to worry about this at all. Another really interesting case is of a painter versus a photographer, Carieu v. Prince. This painter, Richard Prince, used a bunch of photos from a photo book in paintings of his, like as a collage. And the photographer was like, hey, you're using like full pages from my photo book. Like, what's going on here? The court case like eventually deemed that the art itself, the context around the art, changed the original photo page enough that it could be considered fair use. So if you go by like the weird legal understanding of fair use, you could say that maybe like Anthropic, the way its chatbot works, it's just doing like a crazy collage of all this copyrighted material, and therefore it is transformational. I think this is fascinating.
That's so it's ridiculous.
It's interesting, but let me try to like cut through some of like the legal jargon. So, I mean, I think the judge is actually correct in this, because think about this. If you are a person and you, let's say you go read Moby Dick, and then you decide that you want to write another story about a guy trying to catch a whale, do you owe anything to Moby Dick? No. And that's kind
of... I mean, Moby Dick is also out of copyright.
It's out of copyright.
Okay. Yeah. But let's assume that for the sake of the argument that Moby Dick is still under copyright. Do you, like, if you want to write something that's about a guy trying to catch a whale, do you own anything to Moby Dick? Not really. And so that's kind of what AI is doing. And so the judge is like, you can sue Anthropic for piracy because they attained all these copyrighted materials, and then didn't pay for them. And so that makes a lot of sense. So it's like, if you compare the, you know, what humans do when they create new content, humans are inspired by, you know, all the art and stuff that we see. And so it's, you know, it's kind of
the
same thing.
Yeah, it all becomes like a mishmash in our brains. And then we're like, oh, did I actually like write that guitar riff or something? Or is it something that I heard on the radio like 10 years ago?
But you're inspired by doing that. And maybe that affects how you build something. But if you make another story about a guy, you know, essentially chasing a whale for the same reason, it ends up being this actual metaphor for personal self-discovery and man's, you know, man's motivation and everything. I feel like after a certain point, you were just copying Moby Dick and the author,
for
sure.
Know,
if it was
and I think that
say,
that's
hey,
where like
man,
the gray area is in terms of.
But that's
like,
what a lot of the AI models are doing is the thing. Like when you ask it to bring up ideas, it will start pulling a lot of things directly from these like stolen pieces of art. So I hear you, Sam. It's just the AI tools are not even as
another like general example. Mm-hmm. Andy Warhol, you know, what's one of Andy Warhol's like famous pieces of art? It's a Campbell's soup can. He didn't make the can. He didn't make the design of the can. And so, but
it's the context around the can.
It's the context
it's
around
the
can.
Exactly.
Art,
and so even though he just basically looked at a Campbell's soup can and painted it, you know, that is.
Listen, if we're
going
to get to modern art, now things are even
well,
more
and there's also the idea of like you can't copyright a vibe. So, you know, let's say William Gibson, like Neuromancer is in the news because they're finally doing a Neuromancer adaptation. You can't copyright the cyberpunk vibe. You can't be like, you know what? This one person owns like trash-filled streets and like cables going everywhere and cybernetic implants and all that.
I mean, you can't own it, but also if you literally just pick up and copy one of those ideas, people can yell at you for being a goddamn, you know, creative, like being creatively inept. This is somehow all these conversations get back to how much I hate the Underworld movies, but this is what it is.
Wait, how does
this
it?
Is they basically stole a lot of the sort of like world of Underworld from like a lot of role playing games. I believe the Vampires games, essentially that concept and like the look
like
of
Vampires
it
the Masquerade.
Yeah, sort of. And also the sort of like action ideas in it were not really fresh. It was things all done before.
Yeah.
But the difference between like that and like the Matrix is like Matrix also recycling pop culture and things we knew before. Underworld just existed, didn't move beyond those references. And I've always hated it for being empty. Yeah.
Well, yeah, they did it in a fresh way. Like, whether or not you want to say, like, the trans allegory is really hitting you in the face, or if you need to look for it. Like, yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff there.
There's
the last thing that I want to mention is that while I was researching this bit about the Anthropic court case, I found a YouTube video that was completely AI images, AI voice about the Carrieu v. Prince copyright case intended for law students. So it comes all the way full circle. The snake eats its tail.
I hate the YouTube AI videos. Like, and I think, like, there's rumors that YouTube is going to start, like, cracking down on how people can monetize those things. Like, potentially,
yeah,
like,
because
cracking down and monetizing
all you
AI
do is maybe spend what, like, half an hour doing something that, like, most other people spend, like, hours and hours writing script and all of this
may
stuff.
Not even be half an hour. Like, if you combine, like, text plus, hey, make these images and tell the AI to, like, do some work, it's could not even be half an hour. Like, it's just the whole thing. Anyway, that's it for now. Anthropic. We'll be keeping an eye on this, and certainly, like, where copyrights and everything goes when it comes to AI, that is something we'll definitely be focusing on. Let's move on to what we're working on. For me, it's basically just Prime Day, and also I'm going to be out for a couple of weeks, so I am, like, rushing to complete a few things I need to do before then. Sam, anything you want to bring up?
I mean, obviously working on Prime Day stuff and the Galaxy Z Fold 7 review. Hopefully getting the new Alienware Area 51 laptop in for review soon. And I've been kind of dabbling in some Switch 2 accessories recently. And I'm going to have a review on this as soon as I can. But I've been testing out the Waterfield magnetic case for the Switch 2. And oh my goodness, it is the most luxurious, like, handheld console case I've ever had. It's, like, beautiful, like, super soft leather. It's just a case, so it, like, it literally holds the phone, but it uses magnets instead of zippers to kind of keep everything enclosed. And it is
sounds
just
expensive.
Really
how
nice.
Expensive is it?
It's expensive for a Switch 2 case. I believe it's $80.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay. Wow.
But just, like, the quality is just really, really nice. And it's, like, you know, usually, like, gamers, like, we get thrown the worst quality plastic RGB garbage. And so it's like, oh my God, it's just so much nice to have, like, a nice premium thing to hold your very nice premium Nintendo.
I mean, I hear you. I really like the TomTok case, and that thing was, like, I think it was under $40. So that is.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's you're paying a lot for it, but at least you feel the quality when you're using it.
Definitely. Definitely. Okay. Very cool, Sam. Thank you so much. Let's move on to our pop culture picks for the week. Sam, what do you got?
I just finished Ironheart. I believe the season's over. And I have I don't know if you've been watching it.
I watched
a
couple. It's fine. Yeah.
I want to really like it. I think the suit looks cool. I think some of the characters are really interesting. But I'm just, like, having some of, like, the through line of the plot in some of the, like, the story beats. I just don't really see how they connect, and there's, like, a lot of times where I'm just like, I know this is, like, a comic book TV show, and, like, the suspension of disbelief is sort of built in, but sometimes they're just, like, really asking me to stretch, like, even within the Marvel universe of, like, what in the hell, how did this even happen? I think it's a good watch, and I like mechs, so they sold me with a cool looking suit.
It kind of shows how, like, scattered Marvel strategy is, because they introduced this character. They introduced Riri Williams in, Black Panther 2, which came out several years ago. I feel like we've memory-holed that whole movie and that whole thing, too. I honestly did not like it nearly as much as the first one, because that movie was, you know, delayed. It had a lot of trouble because the main actor died. So, you know, they had to completely rework what that thing was. But by the time they could actually produce the Ironheart show, I feel like a lot of the interest had just, like, disappeared. So it's a shame, but I do like I like Riri. I like the look of the show. It's pretty cool. Anything else, Sam?
Quick shout out to season 2 of Dandadan just started. That was one of my favorite new animes last year. And so it just came back above. I believe it's available on Netflix. So
It's on Netflix, yeah.
If you followed that show, check in again, because you got a new episode.
Very cool, very cool. Yeah, I'm liking season two of Dan to Dan. Did you see the movie, Sam? Because that was in theaters for a while,
I did not. I have not been able to go to a movie theater with two kids under four. So
yeah. I hear you. That's why I only have to go, I go late for late screenings, but also it's a part of one of my jobs. So at this point, that's kind of how I justify it. All right, as for me, I have seen Superman. I've seen James Gunn's Superman, and it is incredible. It's a lot of fun. It is the Superman movie I wish somebody had made in the last few decades. You know, for me, the original film is one of the best comic book movies ever made, and also I think one of the best like American films ever made. The first Superman is fantastic, and I feel like they couldn't even get that, recapture that magic in the sequels to that movie. Superman Returns was way too reverential to how great Superman was. Frickin' Man of Steel and the entire Zack Snyder universe of DC stuff never understood Superman.
I was going to say, don't upset the Snyderverse fans. They're going to be acting for a Snyder.
What have I been doing for the past 15 years, Sam? Like, I've been doing this for a while. But I think like there are some things that worked in the Snyderverse. His take on Superman did not, because dude is not a really hopeful writer or thinker.
I think the character, yeah, what you said, the idea of what Superman represents and Zack Snyder's like general style aren't a great fit.
He tried to like Batmanify Superman, and the idea of hope, the idea of like goodness that Superman represents was just completely lost. And this movie totally captures it. Like, I knew James Gunn had it in him because he is a writer and director I followed for a long time. He made us care about, you know, a talking tree and a raccoon voiced by Bradley Cooper. This guy is very good at making us care about his characters. And in this one, this is a movie about Superman being good and the world not understanding how to deal with that. And Lex Luthor essentially being an Elon Musk analog, just this crazy billionaire tech bro who hates Superman because he's good. That's the main thing. I'm not going to spoil much here. If I have time, I will write up a piece comparing Lex Luthor in this movie to Elon Musk, and that's going to get me another whole wave of hate. But anyway, I think everyone is great in this movie. The action's great. It's funny. It's silly. It brings in a lot of stuff from the DC universe. Firefly fans are going to enjoy this quite a bit too, because we have you have Nathan Fillion in here. You have an Alan Tudyk voice, Alan Tudyk being a robot voice once again, but Nathan Fillion just being a Green Lantern, but like a really dorky, silly one too. That's a lot of fun.
I was going to say, like, yeah, this is kind of like James Gunn's like, you know, debut for, he's now in charge of the DC, yes, cinematic universe. So like, and we've seen kind of like the kind of Marvel, like, you know, inertia kind of tail off. Are you suddenly like a lot more, you know, excited about what the DC?
DC's yeah, Joss Whedon right now. And I just hope that the, yeah, same thing doesn't happen to him.
I mean, it's the whole thing. But at the very least, James Gunn, like, I'm more excited about what he's doing because he is somebody who's more thoughtful about his writing and his characters. And he is saying he's being very purposeful. They're not greenlighting any of the DC films until he likes the script, which is, hey, step one, don't start with a release date that you have to rush to make. Build a good movie from the ground up. And he is a good writer who thinks about character. Sam, I think you should break your movie theater streak and try to see this in theaters, because it's a big, bold movie. I saw it in a IMAX screen. It looks fantastic. David Corn Sweat as Superman and as Clark Kent. Beautiful. Crypto the dog is fantastic. There's some fun cameos in this too that I don't think were widely publicized. So it's cool to see. I think this is it's a total knockout, but it's also very weird. And I kind of wonder how general audiences are going to take this. Like, that's the main thing. I don't know how, I don't know if it's actually going to be
doing, it's a little divisive in terms of just like audience feedback so far.
Well, and the critics tend to love it, but I also know some personally who did not like it and they thought it was too silly. And I think we're allowed to be silly. And this is silly in a really sincere way and not the sort of like Marvel smarminess and cynicism that is in a lot of those things too. So Superman's good. It's real good. It's a lot of fun. I hope everybody gets to check it out in theaters. I also want to quickly shout out a new series I'm watching on Apple TV. It's called Smoke, starring Taron Egerton, who is now like an Apple TV mainstay. He's been in several movies and shows for this network. It's created by Dennis Lehane. It is based on a podcast series about a small town where there were two arsonists producing, basically ravaging the small city. And it's up to a fire investigator, an arson investigator, and a local cop to kind of figure out what's what. And I think it's really, really good. It's really compelling. Co-stars Taron Egerton and Journey Smollett. I will watch Journey Smollett in anything. Like, she is fantastic. Greg Kinnear is in this, being all Greg Kinnear-y. It is a really good thriller, really well built. And I will say, watch the first two episodes. This is one of those shows where the setup basically takes the length of a movie. And the first episode is good, but I think kind of generic. Like, you kind of get the generic buddy cop buildup in the first episode. The second episode tells you why the show is something new and interesting and special. So yeah, check it out. That's Smoke on Apple TV Plus.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by me, Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at...
Devendra on Blue Sky, and I podcast about movies and TV at The Filmcast at thefilmcast.com.
You can find Sam online at...
Sam Rutherford on X or at Blue Sky. I'm on there if you want to start a conversation, just hit me up.
Find my reposts and only a few original posts at HeyBellman at Blue Sky. Email us at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts. That includes Spotify.